Penguin Random House Audio presents A Separation by Katie Kitamura. Read for you by Catherine Waterston. Chapter 1. It began with a telephone call from Isabella. She wanted to know where Christopher was, and I was put in the awkward position of having to tell her that I didn't know. To her, this must have sounded incredible. I didn't tell her that Christopher and I had separated 6 months earlier and that I hadn't spoken to her son in nearly a month. She found my inability to inform her of Christopher's whereabouts incomprehensible, and her response was withering but not entirely surprised, which somehow made matters worse. I felt both humiliated and uncomfortable, two sensations that have always characterized my relationship with Isabella and Mark. This despite Christopher often telling me I had precisely the same effect on them, that I should try not to be so reserved. It was too easily interpreted as a form of arrogance. "Didn't I know," he asked, "that some people found me a snob?" I didn't. Our marriage was formed by the things Christopher knew and the things I did not. This was not simply a question of intellect, although in that respect Christopher again had the advantage. He was without a doubt a clever man. It was a question of things withheld, information that he had and that I did not. In short, it was a question of infidelities. Betrayal always puts one partner in the position of knowing and leaves the other in the dark. Although betrayal was not even, not necessarily, the primary reason for the failure of our marriage, it happened slowly. Even once we had agreed to separate, there were practicalities. It was no small thing dismantling the edifice of a marriage. The prospect was so daunting that I began wondering whether one or the other of us was having second thoughts. If there was hesitation buried deep within the bureaucracy, secreted in the piles of paper and online forms that we were so keen to avoid. And so it was entirely reasonable of Isabella to call me and ask what had become of Christopher. "I've left 3 messages, she said. "His mobile goes directly to voicemail, and the last time I rang it was a foreign ringtone." She pronounced the word foreign with a familiar blend of suspicion, mystification. She could not imagine any reason why her only son would wish to remove himself from her vicinity, and pique. The words returned to me then, phrases spoken over the course of the marriage. "You're foreign. You've always been a little foreign. She's very nice, but different to us. We don't feel as if we know you." And then finally, what she would surely say if Christopher told her that it was over between us. "It's for the best, darling. In the end, she was never really one of us. Therefore, I would like to know, where exactly is my son?" Immediately, my head began to throb. It had been a month since I had spoken to Christopher. Our last conversation had been on the telephone. Christopher had said that although we were clearly not going to be reconciled, he did not want to begin the process. He used that word, indicative of some continuous and ongoing thing, rather than a decisive and singular act, and of course he was right. Divorce was more organic, somehow more contingent than it initially appeared, of telling people. "Could we keep it between us?" I had hesitated. It wasn't that I disagreed with the sentiment. The decision was still new at that point, and I imagine Christopher felt much as I did, that we had not yet figured out how to tell the story of our separation. But I disliked the air of complicity, which felt incongruous and without purpose. Regardless, I said yes. Christopher, hearing the hesitation in my voice, asked me to promise. "Promise that you won't tell anyone. At least for the time being. Not until we speak again." Irritated, I agreed, and then hung up. That was the last time we spoke. Now, when I insisted that I did not know where Christopher was, Isabella gave a short laugh before saying, "Don't be ridiculous. I spoke to Christopher 3 weeks ago, and he told me the two of you were going to Greece. I've had such difficulty getting hold of him, and given that you are clearly here in England, I can only assume that he has gone to Greece without you." I was too confused to respond. I could not understand why Christopher would have told her that we were going to Greece together. I had not even known that he was leaving the country. she continued. He's been working very hard. I know he's there on research, and... She lowered her voice in a way that I found difficult to decipher. It might have been genuine hesitation or its mere facsimile. She was not above such manipulations. I'm worried about him. This declaration was not immediately persuasive to me, and I did not take her concern with much seriousness. Isabella believed her relationship with Christopher to be better than it was, a natural mistake for a mother to make, but one that on occasion led to outlandish behavior on her part. Once, this situation might have elicited in me a feeling of triumph. That this woman should turn to me for help in a matter concerning her son might have meant something as little as a year ago, as little as 6 months ago. Now, I listened mostly with trepidation as she continued. He hasn't been himself. I called to ask if the two of you... The two of you again. It was clear she knew nothing, that Christopher had not confided in her. Might like to come and stay in the country, get some fresh air. That's when Christopher told me you were going to Greece, that you had a translation to finish and that he was going to do research. But now, and she gave a brief sigh of exasperation, I find that you are in London and he is not answering his phone. I don't know where Christopher is. There was a slight pause before she continued. In any case, you must go and join him at once. You know how powerful my intuition is. I know something is wrong. It's not like him not to return my calls. There were outcomes to Isabella's telephone call that are extraordinary to me, even now. One is that I obeyed this woman and went to Greece, a place I had no desire to visit, for a purpose that was not in the least bit evident to me. True, Christopher had lied to Isabella when he said that we were going to Greece together. If he did not want to tell his mother about the separation, it would have been easy enough to come up with some excuse to explain why he was traveling alone. That I had to go to a conference. That I was spending time with a girlfriend who had 3 children and was therefore always in need of both help and company. Or he could have told her half the truth. The start of it, at least, that we were taking time off. From what or where, she might have asked. But he had not done any of this. Perhaps because it was easier to lie, or maybe because it was easier to let his mother make whatever assumptions she wished to make. Although misapprehensions, after the fact, were especially difficult for Isabella. I realized then that we needed to formalize the state of affairs between us. I had already decided to ask Christopher for a divorce. I would simply go to Greece and do the deed in person. I supposed it would be my last dutiful act as her daughter-in-law. An hour later, Isabella called to tell me which hotel Christopher was staying at. I wondered how she had obtained this information, and the record locator for a ticket she had booked in my name, departing the next day. Beneath the unnecessary flourishes of character and the sheen of idle elegance, she was a supremely capable woman. One reason why she had been a formidable adversary. Someone I had reason to fear. But that was all over, and soon there would be no battleground between us. Still, I noted that she evidently didn't trust me. I was not the kind of wife who could be relied upon to locate her husband, not without a ticket in hand and a hotel address. Perhaps it was in response to this patent distrust that I kept my promise to Christopher, the second surprising outcome of Isabella's call. I did not tell his mother that we were separated, and had been for some time, the one piece of information that would have excused me from going to Greece altogether. No mother-in-law would ask her daughter-in-law to go to Greece in order to ask her son for a divorce. I could have stayed in London and gone about my business. But I did not tell her, and I did not stay in London. If Isabella knew that she had purchased a plane ticket in order for me to ask her son for a divorce, I suppose she would have killed me, actually slain me then and there. Such a thing was not impossible. She was, as I have said, a supremely capable woman. Or perhaps she would have said, had she known it was so easy to separate us, to dissolve the terms of our marriage, she would have bought me the ticket long ago. Before she hung up,
Sample complete. Ready to continue?